Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes, and this is the audio diary of my life, behind the scenes of a YouTube creator and landowner and author and, you know, all round nice chap. At least that's my definition. You may have a completely different one. I'm sure you do. Anyway, it is the last day of January. Is it the last day of January? Is it the 30th? No, I think it is the last day of January today. I just got myself confused. I was fairly confident then of where we were. I think Sunday is, yes, so Saturday the 31st. There we go. I think it's about nine-ish. Bit late with the recording this morning. No particular reason for that. Was up at around 6 o'clock, but just answering emails and putting books into envelopes and, you know, the usual sort of thing that one does when one's trying to promote one's book and get them delivered as swiftly as is possible. It's looks like a nice-ish day. There's a bit of cloud. There's a bit of blue. It's not raining. That's the main thing. Yesterday was also very nice, but had to go down to the post office and do a few chores. Running out of logs again. Burning logs at a huge rate this year. Don't know why. I mean, I wouldn't say it was any colder than last year, necessarily, but it is cold. And the house definitely needs some heat in it, especially when there's more than one person and you're also reliant on the logs to cook your dinner. But that's all good. It's lovely having them. And it's lovely letting them burn and seeing the beautiful orange fiery light flickering away. There's nothing better than sitting in front of the fire, puffing your pipe, maybe having a small port in the evening or whatever, and just chilling out, just relaxing and having conversation or reading books with one's loved one. And that's what Julia and I do. Although we have been, as I mentioned the other day, watching some films in the evenings whilst I've been recovering from this strange, bizarre illness. And yes, that's so much better than it was. I'm really, really pleased. But I think there's still a little bit more, a few weeks before I can feel all the strength back. There's just little twinges and things. But strength is slowly coming back. It's almost as if the muscles have had the strength removed out of them. Well, not surprised, after nearly 3 months, the muscles have not been used in the same way as they were. So it will take a bit of time. So it's like doing these exercises in the morning just to get them fit. But anyway, we were watching films and we talked about the breakfast at Tiffany's last time, didn't we? Last night we watched a film called Best Sellers, which was 2021 with Michael Caine and some other people who I didn't recognise, really, younger people. Michael Caine played a best-selling author who hadn't written anything for 40 years, and then suddenly he has written a manuscript and he posts it off to the publisher. But he has no faith in the publisher, or indeed, it would seem, in his own words. However, as a last ditch, I suppose, he sends it off. And the publisher is on their last legs going, what are we going to publish? We need a bestseller. And so they're in the process of just about to sell up the company when the author turns up with his manuscript and says, there you go. And then they try to promote the book. They agree to publish it and they try to promote it, but the author, Michael Caine in this case, is he seems to be wanting, he's very elderly and very ill, and you know, he's only the last few months of life, and he seems to be sabotaging his own book tour, trying to not get people interested, and yet somehow or other, through that process, unexpected to all of them, the book is selling really well. Anyway, it was a fascinating film with a little twist on the end, which was easy guessable, I think. And yes, it was interesting. It was interesting watching what the Hollywood have made out the publishing industry is like. And I guess there's obviously some bits that are true and some bits that are probably not quite so true. But it was fascinating because having written my own book, Biggleswick, I mean, I've written the kids' books, but I haven't really tried to publish them and push them around because I realised that kids don't read and they don't read that sort of content that I've been writing. It's too, I think, too old-fashioned and, you know, too nice. They want books on farts and, you know, computers and things. Or they're being pushed to have woke stuff thrust at them by those that think they know better. But anyway, good old-fashioned adventure stories seem to be out of the window, which is a shame. But there we go. And what was I saying? Oh, yeah, so it was interesting watching the film, comparing it to, the small little attempts to sell my book, Biggleswick, Town That Wouldn't Comply. And it was interesting because I think these writers who work for publishers, they have their editors who take the text and massage it and try to make it more appealing or try and get to the meaning that the author is experimenting with or putting. And, you know, without a good editor, the book is perhaps not as good, which is interesting, because that was sort of clearly the thing that the writer, in this case Michael Caine, as I say, was writing his book, and then they edit it. And he in the film, of course, he didn't want them to edit it because in the past his wife had edited the book and changed things around and made it work. And so he was reluctant that anybody else touch his words, but she had died, and so there was no one else to sort of do it. But the point I suppose I'm trying to reach on this is you pick up these books from famous authors or whatever, and you wonder, well, is it all their own work? And of course it appears now it's not. That actually the author comes up with the idea and sort of gets most of it done, and then the publishers massage it around a bit. And I guess it's the same as in filmmaking, where you've got to edit out all the rough edges and try and smooth it out. And it becomes a partnership, the writer with the editor, and then the publisher doing the expensive part of printing it and pumping it round, and everybody takes a little cut. But of course, when you are publishing yourself, you're doing what they used to call vanity publishing. You don't have the luxury necessarily of an editor if you haven't got the money to pay one, or you don't have the right rapport with somebody who will take your work and enhance it, not try and change it too much, but just enhance it. And that's interesting, isn't it? Because now, I suppose, when you're self-publishing, which people would have done initially, that would have been the original way of publishing. Somebody would have written something, gone to a printer's, and had them printed. That would have been what publishing was. You would print it and distribute it. Then there's this interim of somebody else taking the risk, and with that risk they have the right to massage the text. And is that a good thing or is it a bad thing? I don't really know. I think it's an interesting thing. When I was reading the biography of R.F. Delderfield, who wrote a number of books in the 50s and 60s, and particularly sagas, famous for an Englishman, God is an Englishman, or A Horseman Riding By, which is another of his, or To Serve Them All Their Days, probably one of his famous ones made into a film or a TV series, I can't remember which. But anyway, he, beautiful writer, very lovely way he writes, and the characters that he writes about, it's interesting how he develops his writing. I do enjoy his work, although he does have a habit in his sagas to kill off very favourable characters, which is very annoying because you've invested in those characters, and then he bumps them off and then produces another character. And you just wonder whether he got bored of those characters or wanted to stir the pot up a bit, or was advised to, who knows. But anyway, the biography that was written about him, not an autobiography, but a biography by, I don't know whether she was an avid viewer, a reader, friend or associate, but she seemed to have done her homework pretty well, talks about how he, R.F. Delderfield, would spend 6 hours a day writing, which I think is, you know, incredibly laudable. And you must get very stiff sitting down for 6 hours bashing on a typewriter and chain smoking away, as you do. And he would write, you know, he'd write a chapter and then hand it almost immediately. It would go off once he had established himself as a writer and there were deadlines and books that he wanted to get done, and the publisher was eager to take his work and publish it and stuff and keep churning the stuff out. It became a bit of a factory, that he would write a chapter, send it off, and then the editor would edit it. And you wonder if it was more than a first draft or second draft that he'd written. I don't know. But he'd obviously acquired a skill to the level that he could write a first or second draft without much effort. And it's fascinating from my point of view, because I have no real confidence in my ability, in my talent, as it were, if I have any, in the writing. And then you've got to try and look at it and do it yourself. And the trouble is, you start questioning, you know, one sentence. Can I put that a different way? If I can't put it in a better way, will people think it's just too pedestrian? And you become your worst critic, of course, but you still have to do your best. And at some point, if you are passionate about it, you've got to finish the project and have it printed. And in my case, I've had to print it myself, because I don't know that there was a publishing house that would assist me, and I didn't want to put it on the big corporations like Amazon, which it isn't. So sales are quite small compared to perhaps other people's books. A friend of mine says he sells about 10 books a day just on Amazon. Doesn't have to do anything. They just sort of sell. Well, my experience of Amazon with my kids' books is that they don't sell, and that you do need to have some promotion. But back then, I didn't really have a big audience. So anyway, it was a fascinating film. I think that was the main crux of it. It was a very interesting film. And it did spur me, and you know, makes me want to crack on with the book that I'm currently working on. Except that at the moment, I do have these days when we can't go to the land. By the way, The English Couple is up for, if you're interested, you want to watch another episode. Another episode is out today after I think 3 week gap, which I apologise for. But yeah, some days I really can't sit at the typewriter, not the typewriter, the word processor, the computer, whatever you want to call it, and type for very long. You know, by the time I've gone through the emails, I've got a little bit of swelling on my wrist at the moment. So the body's not 100%. It's, you know, pretty much there. But there's just these little twinges of this last part of whatever it was I had. I guess detoxing in some fashion. But it's nearly gone, so that's really, really exciting. From my point of view, I ought to put the computer on so I can upload this to you guys and make Julia a cup of tea. I've been reading to Julia the final episode in the trilogy of my book Splidge, The Crag Flinger, which was it is a children's book, I admit, as I mentioned before. The Isle of Gid, and yes, it all takes place on the Giddy Isles. and I was reading a bit yesterday to Julia from the chapter, and one of the things I like to do, because it was aimed at children, I like to add things in. So that had kids read it, they may do. I mean, who knows? It may get published. The other two books, the first two, are out there somewhere. I don't think terribly popularly. If I could just get this and I could sell the whole trilogy, it would be quite fun. Some people might. I mean, I think it's a family book, really. I think it's more of a family book, even though it's aimed at children. It's full of adventure and full of fun. And people might just, you know, instead of having to read nasty stuff, this is all good fun. I put my characters in peril and I have a bit of fun with them. And I'll just read you a little bit because I want to demonstrate one of the things. It's not an original thing, of course, and people have done it many, many times, particularly probably better than I have in this. This is a first draft, because the book, I had it printed from lulu.com. It's not available, just so I could do my red lines. But this was like 10 years ago I wrote this. And I got the first two done, and then I got disillusioned because I just couldn't see any sales or any interest, or nobody supports you. Nobody's, you know, you're struggling on a project that people have, they're just, you know, not interested in. And so you become very easily disillusioned. But it was at the end of this writing of these children's books that I was doing that I then went back to YouTube and started doing The Bald Explorer. And of course, the rest is history there. Anyway, so this is just an excerpt from chapter 7 from the third book, The Isle of Gid, just for a bit of fun. And you'll see what I mean. It's not original, but I wanted to put it in the book just for fun. From the kids, for a kid's point of view, so that they kind of learn stuff without learning it, if you see what I mean. So here we go. This is chapter 7. You don't really need to know anything about the story, about this particular very short scene. Mrs. Trollope smiled apologetically at Mr. Dickens and then shrugged her shoulders. "That's the last bag," she said. "Will you be getting any more?" asked the short, dapper man with the scraggly grey beard and paunch. "More?" Mrs. Trollope tightened her headscarf, smudging her lipstick as she did so. "Not unless we have another delivery, and Lord knows when that might be." Mr. Dickens looked down at the bag of coal. It wasn't very big, and it wouldn't last very long when the cold night drew in. "Will you have some more before winter?" The shopkeeper shrugged again. "The way things are going, it's doubtful. I mean, look at this place. It's just a shell. I have hardly any stock at all. It wasn't long ago that my ironmonger shop was overflowing with stuff, and I was worried I wouldn't sell it. Now all I have is a couple of pots and pans, a garden rake, a few bags of birdseed, and this old sack of coal." "Hard times indeed," muttered Mr. Dickens, "but I have great expectations that things will improve. Our mutual friend, King Gadamak, seems intent on building a new navy to flush out and scare off the pirates. Perhaps then this old curiosity shop of yours will flourish again." Mrs. Trollope bent down and lifted up the old coal sack and carried it out the door to the gentleman's dog cart. She was a burly woman who often took part in arm wrestling competitions. "You're a bit of a dreamer, Charles. You should stick to writing your novels. If you think the fat old king will do anything to save us, you'll have to think again. I have heard people say how ineffective he is." She held out her hand. 2 and 6, please. "Mind you, if his brother, Ralph, who'd come here to help, then I think we would have had a reason to be optimistic." "Well, for the moment, the Royal Guard is the only hope on the horizon. Tom Tiddler, the grocer, tells me the councillors are moving the king into that bleak house at the end of the street." The shopkeeper clamped her hands to her waist and thrust back her head and laughed. "Well, at least he'll have a good view of the harbour, and he can watch the pirates come ashore and pillage the island, just like they've threatened." Anyway, there we go. And if you didn't spot the obvious references, then there's no hope. But anyway, there we go. I enjoy doing those sort of little silly things, you know, just weaving in things. In my first book, I can't remember who it was. I mean, I did lots of funny things. Harry Ramsden turns up at the palace and has this new kind of food for King Gudumac, who's one of the main characters, this huge balloon of a man who's ineffective and running Gud. And he's as greedy as anything. And he's come up with this idea of peeling potatoes, cutting them, and then frying small chips of these potatoes in oil. And then to add insult to injury, he puts salt and vinegar on it. And the king is enthralled. And of course, his butler, Groggins, is very doubtful that that would be anything that would catch on. And of course, the idea is really that the kids sort of go, oh, that's in this book how fish and chips get invented. And there's lots of those sort of little things I was tinkering with, but of course, nobody's read them, so there you go. Anyway, that's all, I think, in today's exciting episode of The Butt Cheeks of a Man Wandering Down the Road, The Naked Englishman. He's not actually wandering down the road, and I don't know why I said that. I think a nice cup of coffee is in order, and I shall upload this little ditty to the internet, and you can all fester around it and go, oh, look, look, another podcast from that funny bloke Vobes. What will he be nattering on about today? Goodness knows. What will he be nattering on about tomorrow? Haven't a clue. And neither does he. Anyway, until then, I think it's time for a cup of coffee and a nice puff of the old pipe and see what we're going to be up to today. The weather seems to be changing, which is rather annoying. But anyway, I've got books to go down the post office. And don't forget, The English Couple is up and ready for you to view. Enjoy. Till next time, goodbye.